Welcome to What the Fantasy. I am Brandon Hay at HeyB3.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Zada Kansabedian at ZKansFF. How are you guys doing tonight? How are you doing, Brandon?
I'm doing good. Got through another week. It looks like we're going to have a ton of injuries, COVID, players testing positive for COVID. So I've already looked at some lineups, and it's looking already pretty rough. So, another fun week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got Aaron Rodgers in one lineup, but luckily I had Carson Wentz to replace him with, and I got Daniel Jones in the Superflex. So ready to rock with that lineup. That's the only place I got Rodgers, though.
So there's one league where I only have two quarterbacks in Superflex, and I have Brady, who's on a bye. I have mm-hmm. Rodgers, who has COVID. There is no quarterback on the waiver wire. So what I am having to do, at least to get any points at a quarterback position, they still have the designation for Kendall Hilton, who's the Broncos wide receiver that played quarterback that one game. So I'm hoping, maybe he gets a couple points there, but that's pretty dire situation for me right there.
That is so rough, man. Good luck to you this week, man. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, I'm pretty much already thinking I'm going to get a loss. So, hopefully that'll get that out of the way. But, yeah, it's just rough sometimes. I like to have three quarterbacks, especially in super flex. But sometimes just how drafts go, you don't get that third quarterback. It's so late, you don't want to waste it on, a crappy quarterback when you could get, a good wide receiver or something. So you just have to roll with that sometimes. The majority of what we're going to talk about football-wise is just there's a lot of news and notes this week. So we're just going to go through a few headlines that kind of came up for the show and then just talk about how we think it affects it. So first of all, this hurts because I have Derrick Henry on a couple of my teams and he's been rolling through. He's injured. It does sound like that he might or is possibly going to come back later in the season. So what do you think the effect is on the Titans and also fantasy implications for that team? They did sign Adrian Peterson. So I'll go to you first with your thoughts.
I mean, obviously we know that Adrian Peterson is not a one-for-one replacement. He's not even a one-for-four replacement. He's just there to serve as an early down back and probably going to be an effective one at that. I don't think it's going to take much to stop him. Jeremy McNichols, I think, is the running back to own in that backfield. I'm still kind of shying away from it, though, because I don't really trust the situation. I know that Dante Foreman is still there. I know they have a Mekhi Sargent or something like that over there. I forgot his name, but he's another. I just feel like this running back, this backfield is not as cut and dry as we've made it out to be. There's more to it. So if we were going to play anybody, I guess I'd say Jeremy McNichols, just given the matchup because it is the Rams. I mean, you might get one or two good games from Adrian Peterson because he hasn't gotten any run at all this year yet. So he's got some probably juice in the legs. But I really wouldn't be betting on it. I mean, the Titans have the Rams this week. Then they have the Saints next week. So that's already 2 weeks. You're not going to be using Adrian Peterson unless you're in the deepest of leagues. I think this does cause problems for the passing game as well because no one is going to respect the play action. I mean, they probably will because the run game does. We've seen actually stats that have shown that an ineffective run game still makes the play action work. So it's too early to tell if A.J. Brown will be clamped down on by defenses. It doesn't take much for him to break off a long one, so I'm not really too concerned with A.J. Brown. But I think it does affect the ceiling and trajectory of his production as opposed to if Derrick Henry were still in the lineup. So that's my take on it.
I agree on a lot of those points. The only thing with Adrian Peterson is I think they are still going to give him a healthy enough carries, maybe 15-ish, because I think they're still going to try to at least pretend they're going to establish the run. And say you get around 40 or 50 yards and hope that he, kind of gets a goal line carry and scores a touchdown. I mean, obviously lower end running back, but I guess if you're depending on that, that's what you're kind of looking for. I like Jeremy McNichols, but there's been games where he gets passes and suddenly doesn't. I don't know if since Henry is out now, does that mean McNichols gets more rushes? I don't know if the Rams game will truly tell us, how they're going to go moving forward because They're going to have to outscore with the Rams, and the Rams have a good defense. I think another worry I have is Julio Jones just cannot get on the field. He's had those hamstring injuries. And with A.J. Brown, I am interested because everyone's always wanted the Titans to throw him the ball more, to throw the ball more, and they might have to now without Derrick Henry. And then we'll also see, can Ryan Tannehill do that? You know, we saw at the beginning of that Colts game, he threw a couple picks. So it'll be interesting with that. But, I mean, they have such a lead in that division. I still think they'll make the playoffs. But it will be interesting if they can kind of stay afloat because they're looking to be one of those dominant teams in the AFC before Henry went out.
Right, I agree. That's a good point about Adrian Peterson still getting his work. I think, you know, if you think about what they did with Derrick Henry, they started to incorporate him more in the passing game. But they even then, like, he wasn't really – you know, he still wasn't getting a bunch of receiving work. He was starting to come, but it really wasn't happening for him. And even then, they still didn't use Jeremy McNichols as much as before. They might now, he might get more of a share because we do have an older early down back in Adrian Peterson. But yeah, I do think they will force the issue with Adrian Peterson, regardless of how ineffective or effective he is. So yeah, good point. I think Adrian Peterson is still like a low end RB2 at more weeks than not.
No, I agree with that. And one last thing before we move on, were you surprised they didn't make a trade? I was kind of thinking about players they might trade for. I was thinking possibly with the Bears, Damian Williams, you know, since they have Herbert and Montgomery starting to come back. I thought they might go for a lower end back like that just so they have someone. So that really surprised me that they didn't, you know, reach out for a trade, or maybe people were asking for too much since they knew the Titans were in kind of dire straits without Henry. I'm just not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably like to your point that they were probably just getting out. They're probably trying to get, you know, just exploited because they knew other teams knew they were desperate. So they're just probably like, no, screw that. We're not going to deal with you guys. We can't give that much for, you know, Marlon Mack or whatever. So they probably just rolled Adrian Peterson off the street. Smart move.
Yeah, I was actually telling someone, I'm surprised he didn't get a call when Baltimore needed a running back or, you know, some of these other teams. Because I think he's still, you know, even an old Adrian Peterson is probably better than a lot of those older veterans. So, and now we'll move into the Nets one. We're going to talk about the Eagles. I don't think this conversation will take that long because I think we agree on a lot of this. But I just don't know what Nick Sirianni is doing with the team in general, but running back wise and when they're going to run. I know they beat the bad Lions and it worked out, but I just don't understand the rotation and what they're doing. I know I saw you put something on Twitter about, you know, just not trusting that backfield moving forward because you can never really see what's going on. So I don't understand why they all of a sudden went to this heavy run game when they refused to do that with a more talented Miles Sanders. So what are your thoughts on the running backs and just what Sirianni's doing?
I think what Sirianni's doing, I think, well, in regards to last week against the Lions, what happened was I think it was part of the game plan, and it was also due to game script. It's also about the type of running backs that you have back there. When you have a Boston Scott, who's a really good early down, he's a good early down runner, and Jordan Howard is a proven early down runner, I think those two kind of push a coach into, or encourage the coach to use the running game more, especially like a weak defensive front like the Lions. They cannot stop the run. So I rewatched that game, and it seems like it started off more pass. It favored the pass more, so they wanted Jalen Hurts to throw the ball. But they started to really see with Boston Scott and how much push that the offensive line was getting was that you can just run all over these guys. You know, Boston Scott's getting the job done on the outside. Jordan Howard's just running through them on the inside. Really hard to bring him down. Rotate those backs and kind of mask the fact that we don't have great receivers. We have Dallas Goedert, Devonta Smith. They did a few jet sweeps on the first or second drive with Jalen Reagor. So they really wanted to kind of hide Jalen Hurts and that and the lack of receiving depth that they had and talent they had on that. They wanted to come out of there with a win. They wanted to make it as safe as possible. What happened to Kenny Gainwell, I think, was a result of the game script. Can they do that every week? I don't think so. I think they got some matchups going into the future. I think that was a very one-time thing. The Chargers coming this week, pretty bad run defense. They might be able to pull it off, but also we have to take into consideration the Chargers offense. I don't think the Chargers offense is going to let the Eagles sit in a comfortable score margin to where they can just constantly run the ball with Jordan Howard and Boston Scott. And, you know, even though those guys are good early down runners, it's not going to allow the Eagles defense to especially contain Justin Herbert and let the Eagles offense continually run with those guys. So I think we will see Kenny Gainwell back into the game script a little bit more. Not as bad as last week, but again, I don't really want to trust Kenny Gainwell. I think Boston Scott is the guy to go to here. Jordan Howard, only if we can project the Eagles to have some kind of comfortable lead or stay in a neutral game script going to the later quarters of the game.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And I think my main thing is, I don't understand. When Miles Sanders was healthy, they just did not, like, Boston Scott could usually not get on the field at all, like, at all. And if you trust him in this, you know, early down work and everything, I just don't understand why he didn't play. Like, he didn't play, and they weren't running Miles Sanders. So it wasn't like they, you know, knew Miles Sanders could run up the middle, so they didn't need Boston Scott. They were doing neither. So that part just confused me. And with Kenny Gainwell, we've kind of talked about, you know, in the negative game script, he gets more usage and everything. But even his usage is a little misleading, at least games I've seen. It's a lot when they're down late. You know, last couple of drives, he just throws a bunch of dump offs to Gainwell. And I just wish they could find a way to use him more throughout the game in a more, you know, just use his talents more than just, you know, a guy that just leaps out of the backfield all the time.
Yeah, and again, this comes down to Sirianni as, you know, not using his resources correctly. I mean, he's not a good NFL head coach. He doesn't know what he's doing. I don't think he's imaginative enough. He's not imaginative enough with Jalen Hurts. He's not putting his players in positions to succeed. He's not calling plays. He's not calling offensive plays that get his players open. Or they're not calling audibles at the line of scrimmage when they need to be calling audibles and calling out a certain run plays or pass plays. He's not a good coach. It really comes down to that. So when they use, again, like last week, so when they use like the run game, they're not only masking their inefficiencies on the offense, but I think Nick Sirianni is masking his inefficiencies as a head coach because he's trying to keep a coat. He's trying to keep a job. He's trying to get a win where he can get a win. But more often than not, and I think it's like 95% of the games that they go through for the rest of the season, they're not going to be able to pull that kind of stuff for the rest of the season. So Boston Scott last week, I don't think it was implied for him to have, you know, I don't think the run game was supposed to work that good, but, you know, I think they found out they saw how bad the Detroit Lions run D was, and the line was just getting so much push that they just went with it. So don't really depend on that going forward is my take.
No, I agree. So let's go on to the Chiefs on Monday night. They got a win against the Giants. I am not going to lie. I watched maybe a quarter of this. The game was not very good. Neither team played overly well from when I was watching. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about what is going on with that offense and Patrick Mahomes. I've heard everyone say, you know, they need to run the ball, and then people are figuring out with Kelce and Tyreek Hill and all those things. But my thing is they've been doing this for years, and they don't really run the ball a lot. And it just seems like I don't know if there's something else going on with Mahomes, injuries, stuff outside of football, but even when guys are open, he doesn't seem like the same guy and everything. And what do you think's going on with the Chiefs?
I mean, simply, I think just the book is out on the Chiefs after so many years of them doing the same thing, right? You have Hill, you have Kelce, and you have running backs that you really don't use too much. I think we have seen the Chiefs start to check down the running backs a little bit more, and you know they've brought in Derek Gore I mean, they're using both Darrell Williams and Derek Gore last week. So they're starting to rely on the run game more. But outside of that, I mean, does it seem like Patrick Mahomes is injured or something like that? Because he seems not confident. And I know some of the interceptions are not on him. I know there has been like a couple tip passes, but he just doesn't seem confident. Like there just seems something inherently wrong with Patrick Mahomes. I've heard people say Kelce is getting old. I don't buy that. They're saying he's falling off. I don't buy any of that. I think he's still the same Kelce. There just seems something wrong. It seems like an intangible thing. Like it's a culture thing in with the Chiefs. I don't know what's wrong, but there's something not right. There is that sharpness that isn't there. I don't know what it is. There's just something. It just seems like Mahomes is off. Maybe it's his little brother doing those stupid TikTok things.
Man, well, I mean, I don't know what it is. There's been people saying for that, and then his, you know, his girlfriend, I guess future wife, does the TikToks with his brother. And I don't know if you saw the one video where they're with Mahomes, I think at a restaurant, and they're doing all these dances. And it looks like Patrick Mahomes is having the worst day of his life. And
I would be too. It looks awful. So, I wouldn't want to be anywhere in public with people doing that kind of stuff. I'm like, dude, just get me out of here. I don't want to be with
you. So I don't know if it's that. I mean, it might be, you know, he just had a kid. So that's part of it. But yeah, I agree. And I wonder with the team as a whole, with Tyreek and Kelce and Mahomes, they have that kind of cockiness, like because they've been scoring all these points. So like now that they're not scoring those points, they're kind of like, what do we do now? You know, I think it might be it's weird to say a confidence issue with players that great, but I think it's part of it. And I think too, the next thing for Mahomes is he started a little bit, but he needs to take those 5-yard passes. There's a couple plays where I saw Mecole Hardman. He was open, like 5 yards open, and he's so fast. You get him the ball, he's getting you a first down. Their teams are making them more. Finally, they learned, hey, make them take 12 plays to get on the field. Mahomes gets uneasy, gets impatient, and he's going to force the ball. And that's what he's doing. Even against, you know, the teams that aren't that good, like the Giants. I mean, they could figure it out this year because I think they have the talent. And if they do have some out weapons outside of those, you know, main two, but they just never consistently use them. And I think they're going to have to. So, but it's definitely interesting how a team that seems so unstoppable in offense has kind of hit this wall this year. And it's, you know, not just a 1 or 2 time thing. It's been a few weeks.
Yeah. It seems like ever since they lost to the Patriots or the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl, you know, they just really haven't got a running start. They haven't built any momentum since then.
No, I agree. So to another, the next topic is about Justin Fields. He finally looked like most people thought he would look with Nagy not calling the plays, not at the game. So do you think the Bears, even in a loss, because I don't believe it was the Bears' offense's fault, that defense just could not stop San Francisco. And, you know, I'm sure you saw that one run by Fields where he like juked out like 5 people for the touchdown. That just shows what he could do. And he looked so much more comfortable. Obviously he still has room to grow, but that's what I thought he would provide, the potential. I'm guessing Nagy's coming back this week. I haven't really heard anything. Have you heard anything?
I'm assuming he is.
So, I mean, if he comes back and the offense looks bad again and Fields looks bad again, they have to see that it's him. And I mean, I would hope they would and move on from him, but it's like, I don't know if they're going to let him finish out the season or what, but I feel like that's just wasting time for Fields' development.
Who looked more confident last week, Justin Fields or Patrick Mahomes?
I mean, Fields, definitely.
Fields look comfortable, right? Like he's like, let's play some football, man. Like he looked way better. He looked way more in his comfort zone without Nagy there, putting the clamps down on him. Nagy, I think, is another Sirianni. He just doesn't want to lose his job. Right, like so he's trying to make Fields play super safe, super conservative. And he's, you know, how many sacks does Fields take last week? I would love to know. I should look that up before the show started. Yeah, I don't remember him taking too many sacks, like getting screamed like he was before.
Yeah, I don't either. And Although the 49ers defense isn't what it used to be, it's not like it's a terrible defense. You know, I didn't expect him to have that good of a game, and he had over 100 yards rushing. And just he brings that part to that offense. Still can't get that connection with Allen Robinson. So, I mean, I just don't know if that's ever going to happen. But even without that, I feel like he has a good connection with Darnell Mooney. I think there's a little bit of that Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett kind of vibe with them, because they have a pretty good connection. So I think, you know, good days are ahead for the Bears as long as they get rid of Nagy. I mean, as long as they keep him around, I think that team is going to be mediocre, you know, 7-9, 8-8 type thing, and they're never going to be able to get over the hump, even though they have the potential, you know, quarterback now. So that was very interesting for me to watch last week. And the last one I'll kind of briefly just talk about is the Jets surprisingly get a win over the Cincinnati Bengals. Zach Wilson's out. They start it's Mike White, right? Mike White?
Yeah.
They start Mike White. Yeah. He actually looked pretty good with everything. And you know, people maybe a little tongue-in-cheek talking about, you know, Mike White being the quarterback now and everything. I don't necessarily say Zach Wilson is a bust or anything, but I think it just shows how much he has to get better reading defenses, because that offense can support, you know, scoring points and everything. I think it just showed – that's the only thing it showed, just that where he needs to go, because he's obviously not seeing the right reads, because, you know, a guy like Mike White is able to score all those points.
Yeah. Well, Mike White – was notorious last week for having a million checkdowns. So I think he gained a lot of production doing that. And Zach Wilson wasn't doing checkdowns that much. So I think, I mean, hey, Patrick Mahomes, look what Mike White did, checking the ball down, you know?
No, I agree. He did. He definitely did. And I actually found out this stat yesterday. In the last two games for the Jets, Michael Carter and Ty Johnson combined have had 37 targets in two games. 37 running backs getting 37 targets in two games.
A lot.
That's like Christian McCaffrey, Austin Eckler level. So little concerning that they're throwing that much to their running backs, but at least if they're able to move the ball like they were last week, you know, I guess, you know, kind of the same way with Sala, you know, he's just trying to get wins to get people off of his back. So win any way you can. Okay, that's all the news and notes, and this was actually your idea for me to kind of talk about this. So I'm going to talk about three college players that are going to be, well, not for sure they're coming out, but all ways are pointing that they're going to come out in 2022, and they're not necessarily, unless you're really into college football, you might not know their names, but these are players you might want to, you know, just catch some highlights or catch a game, you know, for the 2022 season before your fantasy drafts and everything. So let me – okay, there. The first guy, his name's Cole Turner. He plays at Nevada. He's 6'6", 240. He was a wide receiver his first 2 years, flipped over to tight end last year and started to bulk up. He's your typical NFL for the NFL, that tight end that, you know, you put out wide is a mismatch for, you know, the defense and everything. Similar numbers last year and this year, 49 catches, around 600 yards. He has 8 and 9 touchdowns. The Nevada offense is very good this year. They have a quarterback in Carson Strong, who probably will be a first or second round pick next year. So they have that connection. But this guy, especially in the tight end premium leagues, he's someone that probably might not even go necessarily day one or day two. He might sneak into the third, but he might be a fourth or fifth rounder. But he's one of those guys that if he fits in the right scheme and goes to the right team, I think he could perform very well right away, even if just as a red zone and possession type receiver early on. But I think he's definitely someone you should catch early on.
He reminds me of a kind of like a Jacob Harris kind of build.
Yeah, similar.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. And the next player is Wandale Robinson. He is 5'11", 185. He's at Kentucky now. He was at Nebraska a couple years. Did not they did not really use him the best, and I believe he's from Kentucky, so he wanted to move closer to home. And this year he's performed very well. He has 58 receptions, 645 yards, 5 touchdowns. So he's kind of what the NFL is moving more towards in kind of receivers that you can move around, put him in the slot, put him outside, put him in motion. And, you know, he's a good yards after catch guy, but he can also go down the field. He can make some tough catches. One thing is he was he wasn't able to really get free against Georgia. And Georgia has a very good defense this year. He had one of, like, the weirdest stat lines I've ever seen. It was, like, 12 catches for 30 yards and a touchdown. So, like, everything was, like, 2 or 3 yards, and he couldn't get loose. But I think he's probably within those the top, you know, 5 or 6 receivers. And if you don't get one of the top receivers, you could get him in the second round, and he could really pay dividends, kind of like players like Terry McLaurin, and I'm trying to think of others that haven't gone in the first round normally in fantasy drafts, but have turned out to be really good producers and be steals in those type of drafts. So he's another player, you know, just catch some highlights and just watch some of his film, and he's a very exciting player. And the last player is
I've heard about that kid, Jerome Ford. Yeah, I just heard about him last weekend.
Yeah, Jerome Ford. He was sharing the backfield last year with he went to Miami. What was his name? Oh, Doakes, Jared Doakes. All the people that were, you know, really excited about him. I believe he's still on the practice squad. But this year, you see the change in the stats. The crazy 962 yards, 15 touchdowns. He's shown the ability to take the ball, you know, to the house. He's had some really good games in the past couple weeks against UCF. He had a huge game. He's a tough runner. Probably not one of those top, you know, 3 that you'll get in the first or maybe even the second round. But if he goes in the 3rd or 4th to the right team, I think he definitely could impress. And I don't want to take all the credit for Jerome Ford. I also help out at Campus the Canton, and Austin Nace is a big proponent of Jerome Ford. So I want to do a shout out to him about, you know, really liking him and thinking that he could really, you know, do some things in the NFL. So those are 3 players that I think, you know, just catch when you have a chance, or maybe just watch some highlights, kind of be thinking about whenever they come out for the draft next year. I would say Wandale Robinson's probably going to go the highest, but I think people are going to be enamored with, you know, some of the other higher end receivers that I can talk about later. You know, Drake London at USC, who's hurt now, you know, the Ohio State receivers, and Treylon Burks from Arkansas. But I think Wandale, even if you get him, you know, as the 5th or 6th wide receiver, he might still outproduce some of those other guys ahead of them. So thank you for letting me talk a little bit college tonight.
Man, you're educating me too at the same time. I want to hear what you – I know you're very knowledgeable about this stuff. So, yeah, love to hear it, man. Love to hear more of it as we go through this season.
Totally. So, okay. So there's that. If I can figure out – there we go. Okay. So now we'll go into, you know, our fun part. And this is what one you came up with, top 3 bachelor party destinations. So let's start with number 3. What is your first one?
I think my number 3 is it's a camping trip I went on to. We have this little island chain out here called the Channel Islands. And one of the islands is called Santa Cruz Island. And it was actually not like your typical bachelor party. It was a camping trip out on the island, and we were the only people there, just me and like 5 guys, and there's one camping spot that's on like pretty much like on top of Santa Cruz Island. So the ferry drops you off at the pier, and you hike like 5 miles through these like steep declines and inclines, and the hike is pretty arduous, but once you get to the top, like, it's beautiful. Like, it is absolutely beautiful. We pretty much drank a lot when we got up there, played a lot of poker, you know, just hung out, cleaned up our mess. Of course, we didn't litter or anything like that. And I remember That was the most clear night I've ever seen the stars in my entire life. And just, it was such a beautiful place. I think that was definitely one of my favorite places to go to for a bachelor party.
Yeah, that's cool. So one of mine was, I actually went to a bachelor party around the area. It's around Asheville, North Carolina, and they have tons of awesome breweries there, and they have a lot of lake houses. So we stayed in a big house. They had a lake that we spent a couple of days there, and then we did one day. The only problem is a lot of these houses are pretty far, up in the mountains. So the ride to the breweries, they rented a bus, was a little tough for some people. I have one really good friend. He gets car sick very badly in the mountains. So we actually had to stop for him to puke by a gas station and everything. And someone gave him a bag while we were on the bus, if he had to. But it was one of those clear plastic bags. So it would have been horrible, for all that. So, that was rough. And I'm not gonna lie, I couldn't drink when we were doing the bus because, with all the roads, it was starting to make me feel a little uneasy too. But that's the thing about that area. But it's a beautiful, North Carolina's beautiful, and they have tons of nice breweries. The Sierra Nevada Brewery, I don't know if you've ever heard of it or heard about it, but it's like its own city. It's huge. It has, their own restaurant. They have like a stage for concerts and all this stuff. And we were able to go before all the COVID started. So, everyone was still able to, walk about and everything. So that would be number three for me.
Yeah. And so that kind of touches on my second one, is to go back east and go visit for do a weekend trip to like a nice bourbon distillery or like a whiskey distillery, and just kind of spend the weekend going around trying good bourbon, walking around. I'm sure that they're in Tennessee. I haven't looked any up, but I think that would be really sweet because, you still get like a nice, you still get the drink, but at a mature level, like at a mature pace. You're just not throwing them back through every orifice, through your ear hole, through your nose hole. Yeah. You're just not putting beer wherever you can put it, or whatever. You're not just doing shots getting crazy. You're actually enjoying it. Go have some good bourbon, go eat some good food, enjoy the nightlife. I know there's a lot of good nightlife on that side of the country, and I haven't been there yet, but I really want to experience it. So that's probably number two for me.
It's funny that you say that. I do think Tennessee probably would be a good spot for that. Mine is actually in Tennessee also. I've never actually been to Nashville, but I know a couple people that have had bachelor parties there or bachelorette parties there have gone there. I hear the nightlife is a lot of fun. They always have country concerts and all type of those things. So I think there'd be a ton to do. Because bachelor parties, I really like where you're able to go out and kind of try new things and socialize with, other people, while you're out. I think it's really fun. So I think that would be a lot of fun, on that strip in Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely got to get out there. My first overall bachelor party I've ever been to was, we have this place called Las Gaviotas in Rosarito, Mexico. And I went there for my buddy Mike's bachelor party 4 years ago or 5 years ago. And I think about it at least once every week because it was probably the best time of my entire life. It was a bunch of guys. It was like five or six guys, a bunch of surfers. Went to this house. It was a two-story house. And it was in this like little gated community. I remember walking into the house. And I didn't help unload anything. I wanted to go surf so bad because we were on the road. So I went in the house. And in the house, there was a foosball table in the house is the first thing I saw. Big, beautiful living room, huge glass windows, and out the windows with this perfect right-hand point break with one guy out. And it was like 4 to 5 feet, and the water was bathwater warm. And there was a little beach on the bottom, like a little beach nook you can go hang out. We spent every single day on the beach, just drinking Tecates every single day. There was a jacuzzi in our place. We had a hammock we would just sit out on. We had a karaoke machine we would put on the balcony, and we just sing to the entire beach. Like, the entire community loved us. Like, we made a name for ourselves. And it was cool because everybody, we all cooked dinner together at night. We all helped clean up. We all helped clean up, and nobody was, slacking. But, man, we had, a surf contest. We held a surf contest for ourselves on the beach. There were local women that would come down on the beach and make pina coladas and michelada. You know what michelada is?
Yeah, I've had them before. They're good. I really like them.
Yeah, Yeah, that was the best time of my entire life. I had a blast. We met some of the coolest people. I want to go back. That was the top bachelor party and the top weekend of my entire life.
So my top bachelor party is, it was actually who the guy, his name is Zach, that is my best man. And we went to Key West, and it was when we were, I think mid to, no, I think I was like 28 or something. So they got a house, you know, for a bunch of people there in Key West, and just walking around to all the bars and everything. It was so much fun. We went to the same restaurant. It's kind of, you can get lobster rolls there. I think we went there like six times, like while we were there, because, you know, there was never a line. It was easy to get in because, you know, with like 14 guys, you know, trying to get all of us, you know, into one spot, it's tough enough. But yeah, it was so much fun. Every night, because there was a pool at the house, and we would get in when we got home. I pretty much almost drowned every night because I would get in the pool, and I would have a bottle of Jack Daniels and sip on it, and then fall asleep, wake myself up because I would start to tread, like, and wake up and start drinking the Jack Daniels again. It was a vicious cycle, so it was tons of fun. So yeah, that would be my number one. One thing I would like to say, I've been to a bachelor party in Vegas. While it was fun, just you have to pay to do anything in Vegas. Like, just to like be in an area, you have to pay, and it's just so expensive and ridiculous. And it was
Vegas tons of fun. Sucks. Yeah,
it's just way too.
After the first night in Vegas, you're ready to go home. I want to go home. I feel like shit. I'm gonna be broke in about 2 hours, and I want to get the hell out of here. There's no way I'm gonna survive. The best bachelor party I ever did in Vegas was when I got off work, I brought a suit, I put the suit on, I had no luggage. My friends were already in Vegas. I said, I'm only coming for one night. I had whatever I had on me, no luggage, and I flew into Vegas, and they were at the craps table when I flew in. So I flew in, went straight to the craps table. We played craps till 5 a.m. We got in the car, we went home. That was perfect. I left up. I won money and I got out of there. That was the best thing ever. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea of Vegas, you know, just like all the gambling and all the fun and everything. But like, there's, you know, we went to an area by the pool, and we pretty much spent like $500 just to sit by the pool and get like one bottle of vodka.
A bottle.
And it's just so crazy. Dope. You have to, like, at the betting area, you have to, like, pay to, like, just stand in that area sometimes. I'm just like, oh. So, you know, it's fun, but I think just the cost of everything, and sometimes it's just so hard. But it was a lot of fun when I did go. So I think – so, yeah, so that those are our top three bachelor party destinations. So, I think that's going to do it for the show this week. Any games, real quick, any games you're excited for this week?
Who's playing? I don't even know who's playing.
It's funny you say that, because once I said it, I was like, man, I don't really know who's playing.
I'm actually excited to see if Justin Fields continues this style of play. I mean, is Nagy going to allow him to stay open, or is Nagy going to just, you know, climb up on him? I swear to God. And I want to see what happens with the Eagles running backs against the Chargers. The Eagles defense looked really strong last week. I want to see if Justin Herbert, you know, can rise to the occasion. They got shut down by the Ravens. The Patriots beat the crap out. Patriots beat them last week, right?
Yeah, they did. That was a surprising game for me.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some good storylines out there. Yeah. Let's see what happens. What about you?
Definitely. I'm pulling it up real quick because you made a good point about that. The Chicago Bears play the Steelers, so that'll be a really good test for Justin Fields about that. I think I'm interested, you know, in the Rams and Titans game because you know, there's been games where we've thought the Titans would lose, like the Chiefs-Titans game. We thought the Chiefs would blow them out, and they played really well. So it'll be interesting without Derrick Henry, can the Titans still play well? I'm trying to see.
Jordan Love against the Chiefs. How do the Packers respond? The Raiders, taking into consideration what happened this week with Ruggs, how does their locker room respond? How does their team respond? I think this will be a good test of, you know, how they come together as a team and go on the road to the East Coast, West Coast team to the East Coast is very difficult. So let's see what the Raiders do. I'm rooting for the Raiders. I've fallen in love with the Raiders this year, and especially after Gruden left. I really like the way they've come together. So I think
definitely. Those are
two. Yeah.
One last game I just saw is the Patriots play the Panthers, and supposedly CMC's coming back this week. So I'm excited. So if that really does happen, I'm excited to have him back.
I know.
They keep on getting my hopes up. So I'm hoping this is the time. This is the time. I really need him back.
I know you have a new team.
I really need him back. So that's our show for this week. I am Brandon Hay at Hay B3.
And I'm Zadeh Cantabedian at ZCantsFF.
We'll catch you next week.
Later, guys.